All right, take two. All right, let's again welcome Matthias to the stage. He's a project manager of Qual and a developer of open source censorship circumvention tools. He's going to be giving an introduction to Qual, which is a privacy-focused P2P mesh communication app that enables off-the-grid messaging via BLE, LAN, and internet overlays. All right, help me welcome him.
Thank you. What a world. Climate crisis, wars, the world is falling apart. When we have such big problems, do we really need to worry about even more platforms and forms of networking? It seems as if our achievements in digital communication have only made the problems more manifold. Today we struggle with uncertainties and fears. For the things that gave us stability, our planet, the world, alliances between states, the values we share, the order we know, and in which we recognize ourselves. We are experiencing a shift in power relations and hegemonic context, and we find ourselves in a situation between the effects of power and our own powerlessness. A disintegration is looming, extending to networks which are becoming less and less intercontinental in scope, and increasingly fragmented, leading to a Chinese, a Russian, a US-American network. What does this make with us? Within a formation, we appear as subjugated subjects and are only empowered through our subjugation. In Foucault's power analytic sense, we can therefore understand forms of participation as a subjectification. On the one hand, the question arises as to how we bring ourselves into play. On the other hand, there is the suspicion that not everything can be found in this formation, and even more so that this formation itself produces exclusions, at least as an experience of contingency. The use of software and hardware is a form of such subjectification. This subjectification often goes unnoticed, as many seem to be completely satisfied with their presence in the form of accounts and user profiles. Others are rightly concerned about this subjectification, mistrusting precisely those systems that inscribe themselves so dominantly in communication and possibilities for action. They even inscribe themselves in our presence and existence. The dystopia and oppression, the fear, the delusion, that powers are at work here. Of course, all these emotions have their basis in this very subjectification, which can never be fully understood or discarded. When dealing with communication networks and their effects, we engage in a dialogical structure. We oscillate between our own statement, limited by the option of expression of the specific system on one hand, and our objections to the systemic conditions and constraints on the other. This experience is becoming particularly important in the struggle of self-determination and maturity. Of course, it is important which platform we choose to improve privacy and to improve control over our own data. However, the experience of subjectification is fundamental. It gives us the context that in return, we must be able to also shape these systems. This co-creation is a characteristic of a participatory social order. It is what we mean by democratic, by value-based, and by civil society. The relevance of this power to act and these options for shaping the system often remain unseen. There seems to be an overwhelming force that shapes our own positions in such a way that our identity in the assigned position of economic conditions, cultural affiliation, nation, gender, class appears overpowering. But in a crisis, this breaks down at the moment when these certainties and identities, these contextualizations and self-assurances towards these systems disappear. In a situation of immediate threat thrown back on an existence, on a formation that pushes one's own self-image, one's own conventions of perception and representation, one's own power to shape and act to a limit. Qual arose from such contexts of experience. In 2011, people poured into Tahrir Square in Cairo, Egypt. It was a situation that called for stepping out of those subjectivities and demanding participation and recognition. And while a democratization movement was forming in Tahrir Square, the government shut down the internet and mobile communications. Call was born out of these experiences. Only in our formations can the fundamental aspects of structures, of subjectifications, the assigned forms of options for action and creative forces be understood and addressed. We do not become aware of subjectification, let alone escape it when we are stuck in our social media accounts. Nor do we escape the subjectification in supposed activity from a spectator position behind the screen. Clicking and thinking you are connected is a great and treacherous illusion of online activism. Call is not activism. The experience of Tahrir Square is relevant in a different way. Digital platforms, which like to refer to themselves as agoras or forums, like the old democratic formations, the places of democracy, they are not designed for appropriation or empowerment by the users. In contrast to these self-styled platforms, which often obscure the connections and dependencies, we use call to examine our own possibilities for action and our own options for design and expression based on the materials available to us, our own devices. It is about understanding how our own means of expression are constituted, how we ourselves can create our own connections, how we can take control over our own devices in our hands. Using the smartphone in my hand in such a way as to create a network and connect myself with other people in a network. In a classical network, we are dependent from an infrastructure. This is a cell phone antenna in Sudan. The antenna is camouflaged as a palm tree, a quite common camouflage for antennas in the region. In such a classical network, the device is connected to the antenna to the ISP gateway, and so on. An alternative structure would be a fully meshed network in which each device is directly interconnected with all other nearby devices. With call, we created the first off-the-grid cross-platform Wi-Fi messenger. But not only could you communicate within the mesh network, the app to build this network was also shareable from user to user. New users were able to download the app directly from the call network itself. We called it viral sharing, a concept that was picked up quickly by other applications in the field. This was our first technical setup. From the routing part, we used the OLSR routing protocol. This system wrote the routes directly into the system's routing tables, which created a perfectly routable TCP/IP network. This made a lot of functionalities possible. When someone had internet, it could be easily shared with all other users in the network. With activists from Gezi Park movement, we developed an autonomous device. The stations were usable for text messages, voice chats, and file sharing. The Gezi Park edition allows links to the internet and other networks. Information can be exchanged, even time delayed. Many networks were set up, used for communication. Spontaneous mobile networks on migration routes. Self-built infrastructure in Romani settlements. Antennas in direction of the Tahrir Square. And also really large antenna setups. However, this system also had some downsides. To write routing tables, we needed administrative access on devices, something we are deprived of on mobile platforms. The Wi-Fi standard we used, the so-called Wi-Fi ad hoc mode, became unusable on most devices and platforms. We therefore rewrote the app from scratch in 2019 to create a mobile-first application which abstracts the entire network layer away and routes based on cryptographic identities. Our goal was the same, a mobile-first zero-configuration peer-to-peer messenger with a state-of-the-art user interface. Only using technologies that are available to the user on restricted mobile platforms. We have three different communication possibilities: Bluetooth Low Energy, which is still experimental, local area network communication mode, and statically linked nodes for internet overlay connections. Over whichever mode you are interconnected, all devices are meshed together. We wrote our own distance vector-based routing protocol to make this happen. Call is zero config. The onboarding process is really simple. you choose your language and your username, and you're set up to go. Call has a user discovery. All users in the network will automatically appear in your contact list. To make your interconnectivity visible, we created a network view where you can see how you are interconnected. This connectivity awareness feature is really important to help users understand their connectedness and the state of their local network. Every connection in between two nodes is transport encrypted. And we have an end-to-end encrypted messaging system over which you can chat, send files, photos, videos, and voice messages. We also have fully encrypted chat groups. A special feature in Call is a public message channel. These messages are unencrypted. They are cryptographically signed by the sender. The messages are forwarded to everyone in the network and partially synchronized between devices. In addition to that, we have a delay-tolerant message routing. If somebody is not present in the network, we can still write them a message. The message is then sent in a store and forward style, either to a predefined user for storage and later delivery, or to the user with the closest social proximity. Call is available on all five major platforms, on Linux app stores, Android store. We also have an additional signed binary to download and share directly, Windows, macOS, and iOS. There is also a daemon for headless devices and a CLI binary. So, let's quickly try a live demo then. So, okay. Yeah, when you open for the first time the Call app, it automatically selects the language of your device. You can change to many other languages if you like. And then to create a user profile, you just type in a username, whatever username you like. Okay. And you're good to go. So, and what now happened is that a cryptographic identity was created for you in the background, and the routing protocol started. And when you are in a network and there are already other devices present, then the public messages, partially the last messages, are shared then with you. We are now in the public messenger. That's what was coming in. You also have a contact list in which you see all the users that you ever got a message from or that are currently present. So these users, they have a profile page, you have the public key, and you have the identity, which is the hash of the public key. You can verify a user. This needs to be done off the grid. You get a security number. It's the same system that also Signal used. And then you can check on the other device if it's the same security number, because the security number are always in between two devices. And if it's the same, you can manually trust it, and you get a little badge. Of course, you can also send them messages. So now this was sent. We see we have two blue check marks. This means this message has been sent and was delivered. So while we did that, we did one round trip and we basically made the Diffie-Hellman to get from a static key that we can use for encryption, but already the first message is encrypted in the system. So, over this over this channel, we can exchange text messages, but we can also, for example, send multimedia data or photos. So, yep. Okay. And we should also see the network. Okay, it's not too big. We are only here in the room. This is the program structure currently of call. So we have libcall written in Rust. We have three different network connections. For two of the network connections, we use Rust lib peer-to-peer. We have a parallel quick and TCP stack. Basically all the important features are in this Rust libcall. And for the UI, we have Flutter, which gives us the same UI on all platforms. Call is designed and inspired to enable individuals and communities to establish networks and build structures. It tells us so much about the systems of power and control and surveillance, which we can now understand in specific forms of subjectification, and which we can counter with our own formations, our own forms of networking and communication. Thank you.
All right, we have about 5 minutes here for questions. So questions, everyone. I see one right here, and then I see one right here. I'll get to you after.
Thank you. Wanted to know, is it using the same technology as BChat? And if you have any thoughts on that other peer-to-peer messaging app?
BChat. No. Partially, of course. But BChat also uses BLE, for example, but it does not really have a routing protocol. It just sends messages. We have a routing protocol which kind of ensures that your message really arrives, and you also get then feedback from that. So, yeah, partially. So I would say what makes us quite unique is the routing protocol, where we can really interconnect all the different layers, and wherever you are, you can then use the services that are offered there. Yeah.
Thank you. During the Egyptian crisis, did you try some other layers, quite like advanced Morse coding called visible communications or infrared transmission to create the mesh?
No, we were not there.
Okay. So only 2.4 GHz Wi-Fi?
So we started in 2011 during the Arab Spring to write this application because of the Arab Spring.
So the user is a public key, and the private key is derived on the device?
Yes.
Is there some backup mechanism, or what's the idea behind that?
We are currently implementing a backup mechanism that you can export all your data, that you also can transfer it to a new device, and that you can re-import it again, yes. So I would say coming soon.
All right. Any other questions up? David?
Oh, okay. Oh, then there should be a new version next week. Yes.
Okay. Hello. We have a question from the internet, from someone in the chat, which is forward secrecy implemented?
Not yet, but it will come.
Okay.
We will implement the key rotation system that contains forward secrecy. At the moment, you have just a static key for your connection.
Mm-hmm. And I have a follow-up question, which is, which crypto stack are you using?
We are using for the end-to-end encryption the noise stack.
Mm-hmm.
For the transport encryption, it depends. For the TCP stack there, we are also using the noise protocol.
Mm-hmm.
And for the quick stack, there is TLS.
Okay. And do I have time? Okay. I have one more question, which is, which routing algorithm are you using? How are you routing packets? Are you flooding the network? How are you doing it?
We are using a distance-based distance vector-based routing protocol. So each user sends to all its neighbor packages of all the neighbors it sees,
mm-hmm.
and every kind of one in the network. And out of these tables, the metrics, we also test the connection. We test the connection. We have the hop counts. And out of these metrics, each user calculates the best way to the next one. So only always the next hop in this metric is then decided by.
Okay. So you are doing analysis with that information periodically, and then the local router calculates his best next hop, and that's how packets travel.
Yes.
And do you have any way to assure they arrive at the destination? Any kind of TCP-like confirmation?
Yes, we have confirmation packages, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, and that takes us to our time. Let's get another round of applause, everyone. Thank you, Matthias. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right, I want a fair fight. Our next presentation is also a chat app, so